Blog Talk Radio.
Inner Healers is a worldwide community of people who believe healing comes from the inside, as well as all the answers needed to lead a happy, healthy life. As such, I've set the Inner Healers Radio, an online talk show on alternative medicine, to provide life guidance and help people connect their emotions with their natural inner state of health. With this radio and the help of all our guests and callers, we hope to create a space for sharing our lights online. Listen to your favorite teachers, authors, psychologists, channelers, healers, psychics, music therapists, and more. Join show host, healer, and founder of Inner Healers in Peru, Susana Stiglich, while she unravels each topic hand in hand with her wise guests. Many people around the world have improved their lives thanks to their sharing through the Inner Healers community. Join us for a joyful experience. Shows are recorded, so you can download each as a podcast to listen on your way to work or whenever needed.
How are you doing today? My name is Luciana Stiglich, and I will be your host for today. Our topic today is releasing the path towards peace of mind. And our very special guest is Clara McComber. She's a psychological therapist and founder of Center for Radiant Heart. Help me welcome Clara today. Hello, Clara.
Hello, Luciana. Welcome, everybody, and it's a great pleasure to be here, to be together and share some time together, and just simply share. So thank you so much for having me here.
Thank you so much for deciding, for choosing to share your light with us online. My first question for today is the following. How do our thoughts affect our body?
Well, there's much scientific data that shows that our thoughts do affect our body. So many, many scientists call it the body-mind connection, which means there's no separation, basically. So, thoughts, especially those energized by feelings, can influence the body's chemistry and physiology by forming chemicals called neurotransmitters. So you think about neurotransmitters, it's like messages from the brain. It's a biochemical process, and that can run through all the nerve impulses across the synapses that separate the nerve cells throughout the body. So you basically think about it like all these messages are traveling through and plugging themselves into the cell receptor sites. And it's very important to understand, your thoughts do influence the body-mind physical process. So, and it's really interesting to note that your immune system and digestive tract, muscles, heart, other organs actually tune into your thoughts, via the neurotransmitters that we just talked about. So it's like as if you're sending message, to each part of your body. It's very fascinating what, science is discovering right now. There's a whole new field that's called psychobiology of thought. Now it's bridging the previously wide gap between psychology and medicine. So I find this very helpful and exciting because that says to me that, we can work with some things to heal on this level also.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that our emotions have relation with our thoughts?
I would say so. You think about an example. Let's say if you think of something, right, whether it's the present or past, something you're concerned about, or whether you're happy about, the thought, you think about something, you can feel something within yourself, right? for example, you think about the thought of maybe something you've lost, a loved one, and that can, you know, maybe bring a feeling of sadness in the moment. Or let's say if something happened in the moment and you're thinking, oh, my gosh, you know, this is just really scary. And that, you know, will bring up all the responses in your body, you know, and your stress, you know, the flight or fight syndrome can come up, so to speak. So that's, I feel there's a direct link to that. Our thoughts do influence our emotions. And it's, I also think about the fact that, you know, we have so many thoughts a day. Most of us are not aware of really what's running through our thoughts. How many thoughts do we catch a day, right? And you know, I just think about, I know I don't catch a lot of my subconscious thoughts, so it's an important area to address in a loving and compassionate way. And I feel the more that I can understand in this way that I'm functioning in the underground, that means the subconscious, the more that I can help myself, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. So would you say it's important for us to learn how to identify our emotions and to connect with them? I mean, let ourselves experience our emotions?
I would say that's a very, very important thing. And I use myself as an example, and also with many, many of the clients I've worked through many years. You know, we all have emotional patterns that we get from our family line. You know, it gets passed down from generation to generation. So there's also beliefs about certain emotions. For example, you know, some emotions are thought to be bad and unacceptable, but in reality, I feel that, you know, we are human, so we do feel, and then we have emotions. So if we're not really aware, you know, of some of our own emotions, we may not be able to kind of work with them. So I look at myself, you know, I wasn't really allowed to feel very much as a child, you know, whether it's tears or anger, so I stuffed a lot. I look back at my own life, I think what I can remember, I'm sure I cried as a baby, I can remember about crying maybe 3 to 4 times during the first 20 years of my life, so the rest of it got stuck. So later on, I wasn't even aware anymore. I numbed myself to survive, and again, zero judgment about that because that's what I learned. I didn't know how any differently, so it's not any judgment or blame on anybody who taught us these emotional patterns. We just, you know, work with it in the moment. And if I couldn't feel my emotions, I didn't even know they're there, then I can't connect with them then. You know, most of us can feel different emotions. I feel there's 2 primary categories. It's either love or fear. And fear can really, you know, dominate our lives in an underground subconscious way. So if I didn't even know that I have so much fear stuffed in me, that can be a challenge to work with in the beginning until I find tools to connect with, you know, my body, so to speak. And there's different ways of doing that.
Would you say that our emotions and our thoughts are what constitute our belief systems?
That's an interesting question. I would say, you know, from my understanding of it, that when we're born, you know, each one of us kind of downloads 50% of our father's side, of their unconscious beliefs, you know, the lineage belief system, and then 50% of our mother's. And then as we grow up, we also kind of learn all these different beliefs. And I think from beliefs comes our thinking about some things. So, for example, if I grew up in a situation that, you know, I have real survival issues to deal with, and I, let's say, during the time I was still in my mother's womb, and there's a lot of research that's really showing this, that how our mothers, you know, felt, you know, when we're still in her, can influence and set us up, you know, emotionally and energetically. So I think, you know, it's just probably a couple of factors that influence that, you know, what we downloaded. And that can be changed, I believe. And I'm still working with it because it's like deleting old programming. And then also the beliefs that we, you know, learn from maybe school, culture, religion, there's many different aspects to that. So looking at that, I would say that those are the important factors. So the thinking, absolutely, emotions and beliefs kind of all like a parcel together. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it definitely does. So would you say that our relation with our mother has to do with the way in which we feel or the emotional system that we develop for ourselves?
I would say partially. You know, as I said, you know, the father side also on the subconscious part plays a lot of that. And I think also what we observe during our formative years, you know, the years that we're growing up, whoever raised us, whether it's our parents or caretakers, also teachers can influence us. You know, children really you know, learning a lot from the people around them also that can really affect us through time. And we kind of take on what they believe and tell us, what we hear and what we see, you know, not just what we were told, but also I feel energetically, you know, what the atmosphere feels like. That all affects all of this.
Mm-hmm. So how does toxicity in the body affect our thinking and emotions?
How we feel physically in our bodies, how does that affect our thinking and emotions? So I think one of the things that since we are going to talk about as aspect, let's say if you're not feeling so well, you know, most of us probably, you know, maybe can feel a little bit irritable. Have you felt that before? I know I have. Or,
yeah.
Or low energy, right? Or you can't think as clearly if you have a headache. You know, so part of what we're going to delve into is, you know, the, you know, toxins in the body, whether it's real physical toxins, and there's different types, you know, there's natural byproduct of toxins due to cellular functions that we have, and also, unfortunately, environmental toxins can affect us. But also, our thinking, you know, can be, let's say, less than helpful to us. And I think it's a combination of things. And many of, by the way, this is really important, I feel, from what I see for myself and many people, is it's like if we're not taking really good care of our bodies, as simple as the fact that if we don't drink enough water, especially since our body's like more than 70% water, you can't really think as clearly, right? And, you know, if you can't think clearly, you can also, you know, feel irritable and kind of in the cloud, confused and all of that. And perhaps you could even have some anger going on. From what I have experience, my perception is like, you know, sometimes anger also is because we have low energy. So again, you know, I really look at it as a whole package deal.
Mm-hmm. So I read an article you wrote where you said that 80% of the immune cells are located in the colon. What does this mean?
That means, you know about immune system is related to our health. And stress really affects our immune system. Our immune system kind of regulates, you know, everything to keep us healthy and strong. And very, very interesting, by the way, there's been studies done that if we really work with our emotions, you know, so emotions are not bad in the cell. It's just that they need to be expressed. If they don't get expressed, they kind of, I call it seeping out sideways in the body, so it can come as a symptom. You know, there's a study that if you write out your emotions, so they did the study with cancer patients, what they have found is the immune system was better. That means that helped their health. And they also, if your immune system's better, you can deal with toxins better, whatever type of toxins. And also, they have less pain. So I looked at, you know, the stress right now is at, I believe, an all-time high, not only because of situations around the world, but there's real situations like the solar flare activity, which is greatly increased, that can affect our pituitary again. It can affect our digestive tract, blood sugar. And if we really stress, and there's many, many studies that have shown this, stress can really lower in your immune system. And if your immune system is lower, then it's more likely that you can have an illness, you know, or a disease.
Mm-hmm. You usually, when you write about disease, you specify DIS-DIS. Why do you do that?
I couldn't hear quite what you said, the last question. Can you repeat that?
Yes. Usually, when you write the word disease, you separate these. Why is that?
That means, you know, from what I understand, that you're not at ease within yourself. You know, something's not flowing and you're not comfortable. So if you're not at ease, so you can have all sorts of symptoms like maybe an ache or pain. so that's why it can have a hyphen in between. And that's part of, you know, how disease come to be, really. You're not at ease within on some level. And I would really like to emphasize the unconscious aspect of this because, you know, many of us, myself included, you know, we don't know all of unconscious stuff. And if you're not really conscious of a lot of even that you're feeling a certain way, let's say you're not even acknowledging that you're angry, you can't really get the energy moving, so to speak. So you're not at ease within yourself. And in terms of not feeling emotions, and let's say they keep on getting stuffed, it's like a suitcase. You know, if you keep on stuffing, eventually the zipper is going to give way at some point. Or you think about the pressure cooker, right? You can only stuff so much. It's just going to come seeping sideways, so to speak.
So for you, us not having a regular flow either of thoughts or emotion creates disease.
I think they are contributing factors. I'm not saying that's everything because environmental issues are very real, you know, and also our diet. Nutrition's important, and we already talked about the level of stress, level of hydration, you know, planetary things that are going on. So, you know, I think it's just several factors, not just two. So I really would like to emphasize that.
Mm-hmm. So according to Louise Hay, the probable cause of disease in the colon is fear of letting go of the past. In your experience, how is this true?
Well, in all my years as a colon therapist, I've been privileged, you know, to observe a lot and also observing myself in my own healing process. Let's use a simple example. Let's say if you're really stressed, you know, many of us, the response is to hold our breath, you know, that we shallow breathing. And when that happens, automatically you think about the fact that when you do that, your body tightens, including your colon, and it's like you're holding on, you know, to control everything. And control is about fear, so there's no judgment. So if you're kind of holding on because you're feeling fear, which means you don't trust, then things don't flow properly. So including in the bowel area, you think about in the bowel, you know, colon or large intestine, it's really the sewage system of the body. And when you tighten up, you can't quite let go. Again, I wanted to also say that, you know, if you don't drink enough water, that has a lot to do with it. Not enough fiber, not enough of the right type of healthy bacteria, probiotics and all that. So I would say what I have observed, that's very true. And again, going back to the fact that let's say if you're not even aware that you have a subconscious fear, how can you really let go of something that is no longer serving you? So I feel that that's got a lot of truth to it.
Mm-hmm. According to Carol Truman, all belief systems are stored in the colon, and she even divides them according to each of its three sections. How is this true in your experience?
Well, according to Carol Truman, that's three different sections to colon. Let's talk about that first. That's three parts. So the human colon is about roughly 5 to 5.5 feet long, depending on the size of the person. So if you imagine an inverted U, so on the right side where your appendix is, going up, that's called the ascending colon, and it kind of goes up almost to the bottom of your right side of your rib cage. Then it goes across to the other side, all across where your solar plexus is, that's called the transverse colon. Then it goes down, called the descending colon. So here are the three different probable meanings according to Carol Truman. The ascending colon is about not being generous to yourself, and you need to be. The transverse colon is about not being open or truthful with yourself or others. The descending is being unable to be relaxed within yourself. And I find that this is very, very interesting and true because, you know, on the physical level, the ascending colon is a part of the colon where you can still absorb some nutrients. So you think about if you're not able to be generous to yourself, you can't quite assimilate your nutrients. Your nutrients can be food or even love, loving thoughts or receiving. And so I think that's very, very accurate. The transverse colon, not being open, truthful with self or others, and remember that kind of runs through the solar plexus area of the body, and that is where the emotional seat is, our power center, so to speak. And let's say if you are fearful and you're not really quite sure of yourself, you're insecure, you can't quite really be open and truthful to yourself. You may not be aware of it. And again, going back to the subconscious mind, if you're not aware of it, you can't really work with something. So again, zero judgment or blame there. So we just kind of cope the best that we know how with what we've been taught in terms of emotional patterns. You know, when you learn, you know, what exactly is going on, then you can heal. Let's say if you don't really feel safe to be here, you know, in terms of survival issues, I don't feel safe to be around people because you've gone through some trauma in the past. You can't really open up your heart. It's as simple as it's the survival issues I believe need to be healed first before you can really truly open up your heart and then, you know, your spiritual path. The descending colon is about unable to be relaxed within yourself, and that's the final section before you, you know, move your bowels, so to speak. And if you're really holding on because you're afraid that maybe it's not safe to let go, and also perhaps, I was just thinking about this, the fear of the unknown. You know, anything can change in any minute, and that's just the way life is and our experience on this planet. And if you really don't feel safe to step into the unknown, you might want to hold back a little bit. And even though things may not be as comfortable, and again, the subconscious mind can hold on to that because at least it's familiar. So I feel in all my years of work, there is truth to that. And I also have to add, as a therapist, because I do also emotional spiritual healing sessions and intuitive consultations, is like, you know, every time I work with someone, when we're really working to cleanse the colon, I encourage them to obviously breathe, because if you don't breathe, number one, you kind of unconsciously not feeling to keep yourself safe and protected. And that's totally understandable if you've gone through some difficult, challenging things, especially trauma. If people can really feel and be in their bodies and they can connect, you know, let's say, you know, what they're feeling. Let's say if you're driving to work and somebody cut you off on the road and you're kind of upset. You know, I have seen over and over again through my years of work, somebody talks about something that is kind of challenging to them emotionally, their body really releases a lot more automatically.
Mm-hmm. And this sense of security that you were talking about, would you, you're a healer as well, so would you relate it to our three bottom chakras somehow?
I would say so, because number one, the root chakra is about our survival issues, our safety issues. So that means in terms of, you know, having a roof over your head, enough food to eat, money, you know, primary relationships, how safe do you feel here? If you're constantly worrying about how things are going to come, you know, of course that's going to affect you and affect that area. And the second chakra is about creativity and sexuality. If you don't feel safe, how open and creative can you really be? And then third center, we already talked about a little bit about the solar plexus, our power center. If you don't feel safe and secure, you're not really coming from your full power. You know, that means, that can mean, you know, you really don't want to be fully seen and heard as you are. You may not take the steps to move forward because you don't know what's out there. So those are some of the things that I believe relate to that area.
Mm-hmm. You also talked about environmental toxins. Can you describe what are these?
Well, environmental toxins. So we talked a little bit about, you know, internal toxins, that natural byproducts of cellular function. You know, cells just kind of release, you know, what they no longer need after, you know, they're done with their process. Environmental toxins can be as simple as heavy metals, so to speak. You know, mercury. You know, mercury toxicity is a real issue, and that's not the only thing that really affects us. It can be chemicals, that means pesticides, herbicides. You know, they can come not only in the air, but in our water, you know, the earth, outgassing from synthetic materials, carpets, and also formaldehyde from particle boards, and also, you know, in personal care products such as lotions, shampoos, toothpaste, even makeup. So it's really important to understand what they are, you know, to educate yourself about that and then make some healthier choices with awareness, because knowledge is power in that area. And toxins can be something that irritate you, such as a pollen, so to speak. So, you know, I hope that gives you an idea of what they can be. Also, additives in food, which is all the chemicals, which is very important to understand, such as MSG. That's a great book called Excitotoxins by Dr. Russell Blaycock. And literally, he describes some of these toxins on food. He says they excite our neurons to death, so to speak, like, you know, the chemicals in NutraSweet, et cetera. So that's just a simple list of that.
Mm-hmm. And how can colon therapy help us release the past towards peace of mind?
Well, we talked about the meanings of the different areas of the colon. So colon therapy basically on the physical level does a few things. It's as simple as the water cleanses the colon. So if you think about, let's say, you bake something, let's say a yam, a sweet potato, in the pan, and it kind of got burned, right? So there's these dark bits, and they don't smell so good, so you soak it in the pan. So colon therapy is kind of, you know, putting water into the body, and it slowly kind of loosens up the impacted material. So you think about it's like the sewage system of the body. And once you have put water in body, by the way, water is often the symbolism for emotions. When it softens, then it can come out. And oftentimes I have seen that also when people let go of, you know, the impacted material and all the toxins, they can also start to feel more. And also we can also work with the liver, because that's all related. The liver also, you know, can release toxins, and it has to filter everything we eat, drink, you know, breathe in, so to speak. And once that starts to happen, it's kind of the chicken or the egg thing. People can also start to feel more of the emotions. And the other purposes of colon therapy, exercising the colon muscles. You think about the fact, let's say a pipe is really caked up, by, let's say, with residual in there. It gets very hard, right? So in the colon, the muscles can't really move as much if it's really caked up with this impacted, you know, fecal material or hardened mucus in there. Eventually, with enough material is out, the colon get reshaped. The colon can get really out of shape by impacted material, and we can carry as much as 5 to 45 pounds of impacted material in there. And that's a rather startling number, I think. And the other thing, as many people are not aware of this, that actually reflex points inside the colon. So if it's really caked up, it really can't be stimulated. And, you know, hydration is very important, because 60 to 70% of the water really gets absorbed in a certain area of the body. So when that happens, remember we talked about, you know, the third section, the descending colon, unable to be relaxed within yourself. That means you're holding on. So once we kind of stimulate that release, you know, gradually you can let go of the layers, mm-hmm. and that's many, many different layers. Then you can also let go of all the past, because I really feel that's energetic components of the physical matter, because we're vibrational beings and the body is the densest vibration. And by the way, colon therapy eventually can cover the entire length of the colon. And enemas can only cover the bottom part of the colon from the rectum area through the sigmoid colon, which is the first section of that corner of that colon.
Are there any contraindications to colon hydrotherapy?
Okay, can you repeat the question? Couldn't quite hear you. It broke up.
Sure. Are there any contraindications for colon hydrotherapy?
Yes, there are contraindications for sure. So, you know, I always screen people before they come in. So, you know, basically, you know, if you're very, very acutely impacted, I got to really proceed carefully. If you have diverticulitis, that means, you know, the diverticula, the little pockets that can push out on the outer side of the colon. And if it's anything with ISIS, with inflammation, you know, and that I need to be careful, any colon therapist, because, you know, it can get really irritated and the colon wall can be really thin. Ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease. I even get very careful if someone really has a heart condition or extremely high blood pressure. So including, you know, cancer of the colon, we cannot do that because, again, the colon walls can be thin. So that is absolutely a contraindication, an anal fissure or fistula or even hernias. So that's the most important list there. That's a good question, and thank you for asking that.
Would you recommend colon hydrotherapy to patients with cancer?
It depends, and also in colon hydrotherapy, we actually call them clients because we are not doctors, so we, you know, do not use the word patient. It depends on what type of cancer. Again, we talked about colon cancer is absolutely a contraindication. I have worked with people myself with anywhere from brain cancer, bone cancer, breast cancer, and lung cancer. So yes, but again, you know, I always work, you know, with them, and also, you know, they need to get that doctor's permission and really work with that, because it's really important for me to know what's exactly going on. So that's what I really would like to, in terms of knowing exactly what's going on. But some people choose, you know, to do this on their own, so, and that's their choice, and that's all right. But my preference is that I would like to know as much as possible, because I want to be as much service as possible and to help and not to harm. And by the way, one other thing I need to mention also, colon therapy, I cannot work with, you know, immediately after somebody had surgery. And it's about up to 6 months after colon rectal surgery. And for other type of surgery, I prefer to wait, you know, until about, you know, 3 months or so.
Mm-hmm. What is the non-dominant handwriting technique, and how can it help us return to peace of mind?
Well, we talked about not being able to connect to our emotions. You know, many of us may not be aware, and we can't heal what we are not aware of. In my experience many years, and I've worked with many clients through this, and there's a very, very wonderful therapist that wrote about this, and it's called, the book is called The Power of Your Other Hand, A Course in Channeling the Inner Wisdom of the Right Brain, and her name is Lucia Capaccioni, C-A-P-A-C-C-H-I-O-N-E, Ph.D. When you write with your non-dominant hand, let me back up a little bit. Let's say if you're right-handed, that's your dominant hand. Your left hand is your non-dominant hand. If you're left-handed, your dominant hand is your left hand, so it's the opposite. Your non-dominant hand is your right hand. When we write with our non-dominant hand, it takes much more effort, well, for the majority of us. It takes longer and it's slower, it's more tedious. So it accesses that subconscious part of the brain that can give you information that can be hidden. In such a way, the ego can't also block the information coming out. The ego's agenda is to, you know, maintain the status quo. And it is a servile, you know, mechanism that you got to re-educate it, so to speak. But it thinks that if it keeps everything the same and that's all it knows, it's going to protect you. So again, it's a re-education process. So when you use your non-dominant hand, you can discover many hidden things. I'm still working with this process. I'm a work in progress, still learning and still evolving. And when I write with my non-dominant hand, I can rediscover how I'm feeling. For example, let's say if I address my inner child, my right hand is my parent. I'm a right-hander. So I would say, "Dear inner child, how are you feeling today?" So I let my non-dominant hand write back, and my inner child would say, "I'm feeling upset about this because I didn't get enough sleep, and we've been working too hard, and we didn't get out to play." And then I can also start, you know, asking her, "Well, what can we do to help you?" And then she might say, "I need to go out and just sit outside and run in the grass and roll in the grass or whatever." And then all of a sudden, you know, she might say something let's say something happened. "Oh, my gosh, I'm so sad that my friend's really ill. I feel so sad about this." And then "Oh, this reminds me of when my mother was not feeling well, and my mother was ill, and now she's no longer here with us." So this is just a basic way you can talk to various parts of yourself. Like, you can address your fearful self. So again, if you don't know what your real fear is, you can write from your dominant hand and say, "Dear fearful self, you know, talk to me. I need your help here. what are you really concerned and afraid of? And then the non-dominant hand, that fearful self, will have a voice to tell you, I am really concerned right now, Tom's heart. How are we going to make our rent? And I'm really afraid that I'm not going to, you know, be able to get what I need. And then, you know, all the fearful thoughts can keep coming. Then we will lose our home. And these are very real issues right now, you know, which is understandably, there's some very challenging issues that people are going through. And then this is what would happen. Then I might get kicked out in the street. So on and so forth. So giving voice to these parts. So let's say you can talk to your judgmental self, because you have a judgment about emotion unconsciously, that's going to hold you back also from acknowledging that you may be feeling afraid, you're feeling angry. You know, many times this judgment about anger, I feel that anger is not really a bad thing, it's just what you do with it, because let's say if you got really hurt, a boundary crossed, your needs not met, you're going to feel angry. And it's just an energy. If you feel the anger, I have seen through the years in my own healing process, your life force really comes back up. Now, writing about things that say you talk to your angry self, you may not feel better right away. So remember to have compassion that how many years that you have not felt safe to feel the anger. That could be even a judgment that, you know, it's not feminine. Let's say for women, many of us were taught that it's not feminine to, you know, feel anger. You know, what's the saying? Girls have to be sugar and spice and everything nice. Or anger is not spiritual. It's a slight, you think about, it's just a releasing and clearing of emotion, just like cleaning out the colon. And if you get in touch with that, and the liver, according to Chinese medicine, is the seat of anger, if you really work with that and let it flow through you, then your, you know, meridians, the energy pathways can get unblocked, and your energy can flow again. So whatever you want to call it, a life force, energy, chi, and prana. So, you know, really, really working with the writing has helped me a great deal, and I've seen it's been a tremendous amount of help for many, many people. And it's still a part of my own practice on a daily basis, and it's still helping me a lot. And I'm still discovering, by the way, through this writing, even understanding better about myself and my family's, you know, patterns that I've learned and all the beliefs that go along with it.
Does the non-dominant handwriting technique work for ambidextrous?
Absolutely. I'm actually, you know, a pianist, and I was trained in music, even though I can, you know, work pretty well with both hands, but still the writing is a little bit different. So absolutely. That's even a technique, you know, that Lucia Cappuccini talks about, and I've tried it before. I gave a workshop one time. It was very fascinating. You write simultaneously with both your hands, and you draw simultaneously. And I can tell you, that was really interesting, because I literally physically felt something going in my brain, like an electrical connection. It was a really cool experience.
That's interesting. So
yeah.
Is there anything else you would like to tell our listeners? We have 5 more minutes for the show.
Well, I really would like to talk a little bit about emotions, and to have loving compassion for yourself. And everybody's path is different. You know, my own severe health challenges really opened my spiritual path. So we can work with all the right things physically, you know, the right diet, the food, the water, and that's okay. Because everybody's path is different. There's zero judgment. We do the best we can in the prevailing consciousness. We all are work in progress, you know, so everybody's path is different. And one of the most important things that I'm still working with is allowing myself to feel the full spectrum of emotions as much as possible. And because I don't feel that I can have full joy if I really don't feel the opposite of it. After all, we live on a planet of duality. This is about really being fully alive and whole. You know, it's both sides of the same coin. And you know, really understand that we all have these shadow parts that we judge as not acceptable. And that's the part that we can judge, you know, when we have an emotion such as, oh, I'm angry and I'm feeling resentful. You know, for example, you're going to have probably resentment if you've been hurt, and you acknowledge it just comes from hurt and work to heal it and learn to really give to yourself the loving kindness and compassion bit by bit. And I have seen, I'm sure you have also in your work, Luciana, you know, love really is amazingly healing. and people can give us as much love, but it's really the inside-out job that we inside that when we fill ourselves with love and kindness and compassion, that's really important. And just, you know, work one step at a time. And that's okay, you know. And everyone's always done the best they could. And you don't know what someone's path is. And it's okay to have emotions. It's not any judgment when we understand the probable emotional aspect to a symptom in our body. And that's something I would say, if we can really work with that and understand the unconscious mind runs us, then you know, you can perhaps let go of more and more of the judgment of yourself, and so you will probably allow and open up to maybe having new explorations and discoveries about yourself, and to have true intimacy with yourself, including your body. If your body's a messenger, if you can listen to the messages as to an ache or pain, you know, just breathe into it, close your eyes, and ache or pain, and you know, let's say if you have a pain in the spine, you know, just pay attention to it, breathe into it. And if you'd like to look up, you know, what the probable meaning is in Feelings Buried Alive, Never Die, by Carol Truman, or You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay, and gently consider, maybe you don't feel supported in some way. How can I better support myself? How can I, you know, perhaps open up to receiving from others? So, again, going back to a flow of energy, if you, all the emotions get jammed up, the flow can't happen. So it's like circulation of blood also. And just, again, we all are a work in progress, and it's a discovery process. It's a journey. And one step at a time is really good. And to really acknowledge yourself for that lovingly. And then share with others, you know, find kindred souls and spirits who work the same. And share and help each other out. Particularly right now, I believe community is so important. And I really appreciate the community that you have developed, Luciana. And bless you and all the people involved for that. You're doing a great service. We all won, really.
Thank you, Clara. And actually, thank you for sharing your journey with us. You just shared part of your time and your own spiritual healing path. So we're very, very grateful for that. It has been a very enlightening interview. Thank you very much. And we hope to have you again soon.
Thank you so much, Luciana. It's been a pleasure, and I'm really happy to be here to share and be of service. It's just really my joy and my honor. And blessings to everyone.
Thank you. Thanks to all the listeners as well. Big hug your way, Clara.
Big hug to you, Luciana. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.